Arise and see. So your world's benign, so you think justice has a voice, and we all have a choice. Well, now your world is mine. And I am fine.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Oh, I got tired, Yanni. I'm so sorry, I was just telling Chris how tired I am when we still have to do another episode. After making a deal with Count Dooku to resuscitate the ailing Baking Clan, Clovis finds himself a pawn on Dooku's design. Clovis has brought war to Scipio, forcing the Republic to intervene. Clovis gets everything he wants, but not in a good way. Palpatine and Dooku are giggling like little girls, and for some reason, Padme goes back to Anakin. The reason is episode 3. We're talking about Crisis at the Heart this week. How you doing, Cleus?
Good. Well, no, Padme just is not, she ain't woke.
No, she's not. So, oh my gosh, I'm fine, because we're recording two tonight, and nothing has happened the last 5 minutes other than me peeing.
No, yeah, but our bladders are both empty. That's about it.
I don't know. You know, okay. Actually, I was about to say something, but it might be like too TMI. Should I? It's our show.
How TMI? More TMI than anything else that we've had on this show?
That's very true. You know how when you can like feel a poop coming, but it's not there yet?
Yes.
I'm in that spot. Like, I can feel it. It's in my tummy, and I'm like, it's coming, but it probably won't come during the course of this episode.
It's on the track, but it hasn't come around the bend.
Yeah, it hasn't, like, started prairie dogging. So.
Turtlehead.
Yay! Aw, oh, classy as ever, guys.
Well, I know this show won't be extremely long.
No. I mean, I can always stop, and you can play your little poop song.
I don't have a poop song. I only have a pee song, so I don't know. I might have to go back to the composing.
Didn't you tell me that you wrote a little poop song?
Oh, I do have a poop song. Never mind. What am I thinking? I do have a poop song. It's called Goodbye, Mr. Poop.
Yeah. They're adorable. I really do think you should, like, copyright them and sell them, man. They're cute little kid songs. Well, you ready to wrap up this Clovis arc?
Yeah, my peace song does have lines about sniffing glue in it.
But I mean, that's easy to change. You could be like,
no, I will not. I will not change my arc. I will not change weaken, water down my arc.
Sniffing blue flowers. I don't know. Anyway, you ready to get into this episode?
I am ready.
All right, let's wrap up the Clovis arc. Did you like this one?
I did. I don't think I like this one. Well, I know I didn't like this one. I think the last episode was the best episode of the Clovis arc.
They were all solid across the board for me.
Yeah, I'm not saying this is a bad episode. I'm just saying the last one was my favorite one.
Yeah, I was surprised you scored it a 9, to be honest.
I was too. But at the end of it, I was just like, I've got to hand it to this episode. It went someplace I never expected it to, and it didn't cop out when it did. So,
yeah, I was definitely solid 8s across the board. They all have good and bad things that made them pretty solid straight across. So, all right, here we go. Crisis at the Heart is the 115th episode of Star Wars: The Clone Wars, and aired on March 7, 2014. It was written by Christian Taylor and directed by Stuart Lee. Some extra information for you. With his wing-adorned helmet and rotating blaster called the Hammer, Clone Commander Thorn is a nod towards the classic Marvel superhero Thor. Beck LaWise, the Speaker of the Separatist Senate, was last seen in the episode, Season 4 episode, A Friend in Need. And finally, when the Moon Seed controlled to the Baking Clan over Palpatine, when the Moon Seed controlled the Baking Clan over to Palpatine, the camera passes through the Senate chamber, catching a disgusted Mon Mothma folding her arms in disapproval.
I didn't catch that.
It's a second. Like, if I wasn't looking forward in that scene, I would have missed her. But, like, it's kind of like going down the line, and, like, the last person you see as it goes down this line is Mon Mothma, and she just crosses her arms and shakes her head, and then it flashes back to Palpatine. It's probably about a second to 2 seconds worth of Mon Mothma. So, but I liked that moment because I think I actually confused it last week. I think last week I said both Bail Organa and Mon Mothma were disgusted by everything that was happening. This was the Mon Mothma week. That was a mistake on my part. So that's what happens when you do two episodes together. It all just blends together. So you know who also likes to blend two things together? Hi, Yoda. Hey, you've been very active in these episodes.
Yes. Yoda gets more important in this part of the story.
Oh, just you wait, Yoda. You got a big little arc coming up. I might have to actually, like, write you lines and stuff.
Not as important out here as Jar Jar.
No, well, you do continue with 5... sort of ladies. They're sort of ladies.
Okay. What else?
You know, I was talking to my coworker.
And
there's a show called Red vs. Blue, and it's by Rooster Teeth. And there's a line in there, and it's just the most, like, man line ever, but it makes me laugh every time. And the line is, "Women are like Voltron. The more you put together, the better it gets." And it's so funny, and it makes me laugh every time. Okay. Even though it's like the worst. Huh?
Yoda would subscribe to Voltron theory.
Alright, Yoda, what's the platitude?
Deceit is the weapon of greed. In bed.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a weapon of greed in bed. I don't think it's the sole weapon of greed in bed, but...
No, there's a lot of weapons.
Many tools in the toolbox.
Yeah. Well, ready to get to it?
It's Act 1.
Act 1.
Act 1, I assume?
Yep. You can always tell, like, when we do two episodes, because, like, one episode will be ridiculously long, and the second episode's like, let's get through this shit.
We're whipping right through it, yeah. Well, you already stated that there might be a timer on this episode anyway.
No, I feel fine. I just might be a little gassy, but you guys won't know that.
Yeah, well, that's good. It reminds me of podcasting with Scott Gardner.
Sorry.
Exactly.
That was my hand, I promise. All right, Act 1.
Act 1.
Shit went down last week.
And may go down this week, too.
I didn't plan for that. That's funny. Padme's ex-boyfriend, Resh Clovis, helped her uncover missing Republic money in the banking clans. With the support of Dooku from the Separatists and Palpatine from the Republic, they make Clovis the head of the banking clan. Because of his jealousy, Anakin beat the shit out of Clovis last week, prompting Padme to pretty much break up with him. On to this week, or in Friends terms, you know, the TV show's Friends. They were on a break! Anyway, it's just as bad in this show as if it was in Friends. Alright, on this week. On Scipio, they need to transfer all the power from the banking clan to Clovis so that both the Republic and the Separatists are present. Padme and Clovis are met with Separatist Senator Beck LaWise to oversee the process. Neither side will be allowed to bring their troops inside to the neutral zone, so Clone Commander Thorn must wait outside with the Separatist droids. Inside, the Golden Five leaders of the bank were found guilty of embezzlement and are taken away to jail. All power immediately transfers to Clovis. Everyone thanks him for his service, and everything is going too smoothly. Even Senator Beck seems all chummy with Padme and about this Clovis deal. But this is the third episode of an arc, so you know everything's about to fall apart in the next 20 minutes. Inside his egg tower, Clovis is enjoying the new view when Dooku Skypes in for him. Remember last episode when we were saying that Clovis was getting all this power from Dooku without a catch and it seemed too good to be true? Well, here's the catch. Clovis doesn't want to swear allegiance to either side, and Dooku thinks that that is just hilarious. He stuck Clovis in power, and he will blackmail the guy unless Clovis agrees to be his pawn. Clovis will raise the interest rates on the Republic, or else Dooku will destroy the banks that Clovis loves so much. What'd you think of Act 1?
Not bad, not bad. I'm gonna call Senator Beck, Dr. Brain Hat.
You called him something very similar to that back in Season 4.
I think I might really have called him Dr. Brainhead or Mr. Brainhead, but...
Something along that.
It's not Dr. Brain Hat. And my only other note is, man, Palpy is just trolling everybody. Just everybody's doing double duty of, you know, of messing everybody else up, you know? I mean, I'm sure this is all messing up Dooku, too, you know? He's just throwing monkey wrenches into everything for everybody. He's built up this thing that he needs to collapse, and now he's starting the collapse of it, and it's just fun to watch.
Yeah, and it should be happening at this point in the show.
Yeah, and, you know, since we saw it all go down in Episode 3, it's just, I don't know, I can't get enough of Palpatine, you know, his machinations. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it. But that's all I really have for Part 1.
I have one little note and a two-part big note. So, my little note is, poor Clone Commander Thorn, forced to wait outside with droids, because you know those are some uncomfortable chats to pass the time.
Like, oh, yeah.
Hey, droids. Hi. So, probably going to kill each other at some point.
It depends on what... They're just regular battle droids, you could probably get them to say some really stupid stuff. It could probably be really... It would be like talking to, like, a whole bunch of Barney Fifes.
But they're all assassin droids, so they'd be like, right, so, how's your day? Rah, 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 rah.
Yeah, they would just stare at you.
Well, that's great. Well, bye. So we're going to go play solitaire inside all of our ships and pass the time. All right, so my big two-parter note. So one actually has to do with this, and then the other one, I have, surprise, surprise, has to do with Ron Alliances, because I'm trash. So I actually really like the moment where the Separatist Senate Beck and Padme have a little chat about Clovis. And when he's like, do you trust Clovis? And she's like, yes, I know him really well. I trust him. And Beck trusts her words about Clovis. And it reminded me, like, way, way back in a few seasons ago when Padme took Ahsoka to meet Mina and Lux Bonteri. Ahsoka was really shocked that Padme was friends with Separatists. Do you remember that episode?
Yeah.
Well, Padme told her that all the Separatist senators used to be with the Republic and that she worked with many of them for years and she was friends with them even though that their ideals were different enough to start a war. And that's what this scene reminded me of, because this was a great callback to that. Beck and Padme have probably known each other for years, and they probably actually used to work together. So I actually really like that moment a lot, because it shows that, like, the senators aren't bad, they just have different ideals. And they're willing to work with Padme. He's perfectly willing to work with her, and he trusts her opinion in that moment.
Yeah, yeah, he has history with her.
Yeah, and I thought that it's very minor, but I think that's actually a really nice moment to show, like, the state of at least the politics between the two sides. I think that's kind of like, I make this point later on, but I think both sides actually really want to work together. It's Palpatine and Dooku that fucks
right,
everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, generally people want to get along. You need to have Palpatines out there to really stir things up. You got to stir things up to really get people fighting each other.
Yeah. And my other note, like I said, surprise, surprise, it ties in with Ron Alliances. But like I was saying, like, last episode, Throne Alliances takes place in the same time period as this arc. It's right around the same time. So it's actually a very relevant note to this whole Separatist Beck Padme thing. There's a moment in the book where Thrawn asks Padme why they're fighting the Clone Wars in the first place. And she says that the Separatists started the war by seceding from the Republic. And he kind of stops and points out the problem. And he goes, well, if they have just different political ideals, what's wrong with them making a separate government? What's wrong with there being another power to trade with? They could trade with them and exchange goods. And he was like, it won't weaken your Central Republic government. Because right now it sounds like you have so many voices that disagree. If you take out a chunk of those, you'll be more effective because there's less people to do, like, to disagree with. And Padme says, like, doesn't have an answer for that side of things. But she states that they're fighting because the Separatists attacked them first. So I just thought that was a very interesting point of, like, Thrawn as an outsider looking into the Clone Wars going, this is really dumb. Like, you guys are overcomplicating this. Let them succeed. Let them succeed and form their own government and just have two governments. What the hell? So I just thought that was a very interesting point because he's an outsider looking at the Clone Wars going, you guys are making this really complicated.
Yeah, this doesn't make... The Clone Wars shouldn't make a whole lot of sense to Thrawn. As a matter of fact, it would be kind of dangerous to have Thrawn looking over the Clone Wars because he might figure out what... He might be smart enough to figure out what Palpatine's up to, you know what I mean?
That's actually the big point of the big reveal of the first Thrawn novel, which, you know, last episode I was like, if you want spoilers of Thrawn Alliances, listen to After Our Credits. The first Thrawn novel's been out for a few years now, so I'm going to spoil it for you. The reason that all that happened in Thrawn Alliances is Thrawn is actually purposely watching the Clone Wars. Like, he's watching the Republic because he's trying to decide whether or not they would be a good enough ally for the Chiss. So he's deeming them whether or not they would be good allies. Well, the big reveal of the first Thrawn novel is he's doing the same thing for the Empire. Now that the Empire is there, he goes to them to see if they're a good ally. He does not expect them to make him an admiral, pretty much, and like because he expected just to show up and just like study them and stuff. But they were like, "Hey, you want to be in our military?" And he's like, "Sure, whatevs."
Better opportunity to study him.
Yeah, but the big point is that, you know, wasn't in the Thrawn comic, which I was very surprised of because it's the big reveal of the book. He has one of two jobs. He either makes the Empire stronger to make them a better ally, or if he deems them too weak, he's supposed to weaken them from the inside so they're a better target for other people to attack.
Right.
And I was like, that's such a big deal, and that changes everything about his character. That he's either there to help the Empire or destroy it from the inside. And that's what I feel like everyone forgets. And I'm really, actually, when we get to Rebels and get to the Thrawn arcs, that's something I'm going to be personally really looking forward is he trying to help them or slowly destroy them? Because there's a lot of times he lets the Rebels get away. And I have to wonder if it's the second part of that plan where he's starting to realize this Empire is not great. Maybe I need to start letting them loose.
That could be, I guess. That yeah.
So that's something I'm really looking forward to. But yeah, I just found that interesting as like an outsider looking at the Clone Wars. He's like, this is dumb. This is a dumb war, guys. Why are you fighting? But that's all I have for Act 1.
That's usually what just happens with pretty much any war in general anyways. If you look at it from far enough away, it's dumb.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, Act 2?
Act 2.
It's when all the fun starts. Clovis tells Padme he plans on raising interest rates on the Republic, and she's so shocked. She demands to know why, but he can't even look at her as he walks away. Back on Coruscant, the Senate is pissed that Clovis is doing this, because they're also not doing this to the Separatists, so they're purposely targeting the Republic. Yoda and Wet Blanket Windu looked on Anakin with, look on the Senate with Anakin, and Yoda is like, yeah, you might have been right about Clovis, Anakin. But even all the Jedi are surprised that Clovis is pulling such a dick move so early. Something isn't right, and they don't know what it is. Back on Scipio, Dooku has arrived on the planet with a full armada of ships with one goal. Make Rush Clovis look like a Separatist. The clones are just waiting around and hanging out and minding their own business when they realize that they're under attack. Commander Thorn calls to Padme, saying that they won't get to her in time. She needs to get a ship and get the hell out of there as fast as she can. Thorn's ships are quickly destroyed, and he rushes to pull his men inside the city gates. But they're completely cut off, surrounded, and quickly, Commander Thorn and his men are gunned down one by one, and Dooku arrives on the scene. Padme puts a plea to Palpatine and Anakin, saying that the Separatists are invading Scipio. And Palpatine's all like, oh no, that's terrible. Who could have ever seen this coming? And the droid comes into a hologram and takes Padme captive. Palpatine invokes an immediate emergency meeting of the Senate to fight back. And Palpatine turns to Anakin and goes, so you go get Padme and take care of this little Clovis thing. Have fun. Back on Scipio, Padme is brought before Clovis and Beck. Dooku sashays in there like he's king of the castle, and Padme is stunned. And Dooku is like, but my dear, you are the one to help all this happen. And the Separatist Senate Beck says that the Separatist Senate would never approve of this. Padme grabs a blaster, but Dooku uses the force to force her to shoot down Beck and kill him, and she is distraught. Clovis is aghast with the entire ordeal. Dooku tells Padme that the Separatists have control of all the money in the galaxy, and Clovis helped them do it, and the droids take Padme into custody. What'd you think of Act 2?
Ah, it was a great battle. Too short.
Too short. Oh god. My thing is with like Thorn, that's my first note, like my poor clone babies, they're just in the wrong place at the wrong time and they're pulled into this for no reason. But like from beginning to end, like Thorn is not there long. He's probably in the show for maybe a minute, and his entire thing is Padme. Protect the senator, take care of her, get her out of there, we'll buy you time. And he knows when he says we'll buy you time, it's with his life. And I was like, Thorn, I love you for your minute that you're here.
But it's a great battle. It just, like, the shit hits, I like how it goes down. Just all of a sudden, the shit just hits the fan. And, yeah, it's great. And, brutal and short. And this is I just had this thought that, like, and this is sort of just a weird separate little note. My only other note, I think there's a really big blind spot for Anakin with Palpatine when it comes to Padme. I think Anakin is always going to trust that Palpatine's going to look out for Padme because they come from the same planet and they sort of went through the episode one ordeal together.
Mm-hmm.
So he always is going to think of Palpatine as Padme's like protective dad type thing, which is just a big mistake. Because it's just the opposite. That's all I got for Act 2. It was a good act, but not a lot to write about except for that just wonderful fight.
That's how I'm pretty much too. My only other note, I kind of touched on it already, but I think like the little bit of time he's here, the Separatist Senator Beck is a really interesting character. Like I was saying, Act 1, a lot of the Separatist Senators we've seen, like him and Mina Bonteri, aren't inherently bad people. They just disagree with the corruption of the Republic, which is why they broke away in the first place. And so when he realizes that Dooku is taking over the banking clan, he actually says to Dooku, the Separatist Senate will not approve of this. And it's Dooku, and, like, of course, then Dooku has him killed, so he can't say anything to the Separatist Senate. So, like I was saying last act, it's Dooku and Palpatine and people like Grievous that are the real bad guys here. And it's kind of sad. The Separatist Senate is just as much caught up in this war as everybody else.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, most of the people are just regular people, just like the other side, caught up into it, you know?
Yeah. And I think that I actually kind of wish they, like, touched on that a little bit more through the course of the show. Like, we loved the episode that they did where Ahsoka and Padme go to the Separatist side and Ahsoka gets to meet actual Separatists. We loved that episode.
Yeah, and that was also neat, too, because it portrayed Dooku playing just sort of, like, the mundane, you know, the president, you know?
Yeah.
And not like the evil Dooku. He was just sort of the separate. He would just come out like, hey, everybody, let's get through this parliamentary procedure and stuff like that.
And have a vote.
Yeah. And meanwhile, he and Palpatine are both just like working hand in hand on their respective sides. And yeah, it's a neat dynamic.
So I just wish we got to see more of characters like Beck and more characters like Mina, where we get to see like the separatist side of this fight, because I think that's what really fleshes it out like so much in this war, is they didn't leave because they wanted to start a war. They left because they had just different ideologies. And I think that's such a fascinating point that, like, really could have, like, this show's already great, but I think that would have, like, taken it up.
Well, they had their ideology, but they just got manipulated. You know?
Yeah, and they left because of the corruption. I mean, give me that, like a four-episode arc from the point of view of the Separatists instead of the fucking whack Gascon, Sunny Day in the Void.
Speaking of corruption, they're doing it again. They said corruption about 48 times in the last two episodes.
At least it's not the title of the episode. It's not Crisis at the Corruption Heart. But yeah, I would have much rather had a four-episode arc show it from the point of view of the Separatists instead of the droid arc last season. I think that actually would have been really awesome. Like, have some character, have a character at Beck, and it's like, what happens on his side, and him, like, fighting the Republic, and... like, what does that mean to him? And, like, what does that mean for the people of his world and stuff? Yeah. That's all I got. Act 3?
Act 3. I'm ready.
All right, Act 3.
Look at us whipping through this.
Is all my notes in Act 3? I have some good notes in Act 3.
Okay, I got a long letter, I think, coming up.
Yeah. Before the Senate, Palpatine is like, oh no, the Separatists have the bank. Get angry at them. The scary Separatists have betrayed us once again. Let's fight them. And he gets the approval of the Senate to invade Scipio. Before Anakin leaves, Yoda and Wet Blanket Windu are like, bro, don't let your emotions get in the way of your mission. You're there for the banks, not just to save Padme. And Anakin gives him a thumbs up, ignores them, and leaves on his mission. Back on Scipio, Dooku and Palpatine are giggling like girls because their plan has gone so well. And Dooku is like, I know, Master, we did it. He's like, I know, we did do it, didn't we, Dooku? Good job! And they reveal their true plan. They want all the money in the galaxy to be transferred to Palpatine because, you know, funding an empire is hella expensive. That is what this entire arc is about. Palpatine wants all the money. He wants to make it rain in his office. Meanwhile, that's not a bad thing, by the way. I know I said it in a very sarcastic tone. That's not a bad thing. It's actually a very brilliant arc. Meanwhile, Clovis tells Padme everything, and he's hopeful that he can keep control of the banks once Dooku is gone. And Padme is like, oh my god, you are dumb. The Republic is coming, and you brought war to the most neutral part of space. And Anakin arrives with Rex. So hooray, we have Rex very briefly, but he's there. And they start their attack. And it's an awesome space battle. Dooku gets back on his ship and says they've completed everything they wish to do. He withdraws all his forces and leaves whoever is still left on the planet to fend for themselves. And Dooku's out, and all the Separatists leave. With the Republic coming in, Clovis asks for Dooku, but Dooku has pulled a Bi Felicia and he's not there anymore. And Scipio is alone to face the wrath of the Republic. Anakin leaves Rex to take care of the droid, and he goes to find Padme. Clovis pretty much watches his entire world crumble around him. He muses about his legacy, but ain't no one got time for that, because Anakin Skywalker comes in and destroys the droid holding his wife. Scared, Clovis grabs Padme and holds her at blaster point. He pleads that he's not the villain, it's all Dooku. Outside, a vulture droid gets shot and crashes into their tower, sending the three of them toppling outside into the edge of the cliff. Anakin manages to grab both of them by the hands, but they're too heavy for him to pick back up. Clovis begs to be let go and to save Padme, and she pleads with Anakin not to drop Clovis. Anakin does his best to hold on. Finally, Clovis makes the choice and lets go of Anakin to save Padme. The second time, he made that choice for her like that. Still not okay that he tried to force himself on her last episode, though, so let's be clear, this does not redeem him. He's still a creep. And Anakin pulls Padme to safety. And apparently that's enough to allow them to get back together and let bygones be bygones? I don't know. Because they're apparently back together now. Back in the Senate, the banking clan is like, because Clovis fucked up, We're getting all the money in the galaxy to Palpatine! Hooray, Palpatine! And Palpatine's like, aw, gee, thanks, everyone. I promise I'll give back all the money once the Clone Wars are over. And I promise I won't use it to fund an intergalactic empire with a capital E. Have a great night! And the crowd goes wild. And Padme looks on in horror. And so you know that her, Mon Mothma, and Bail Organa are about to start the Rebel Alliance very, very soon in that deleted scene of Episode 3. The end.
Hey, was it me or did Palpatine's voice sound a little funny in this part?
This had both, this episode is one of those episodes where they had half of Ian Abercrombie's and half Tim Curry because they didn't have the episode fully finished when Ian Abercrombie died.
Okay.
So some of the episode was Tim Curry and some of the episode was Ian Abercrombie.
Okay, that makes sense.
Actually, there was a point, and I thought about it as I was reading it. It's not in my notes.
Because in the last episode, it was so obviously Abercrombie doing Palpatine the whole episode, and I mean, and his voice of the Palpatine as the head of the Senate is so like dead on to the actor, so
yeah,
I can always tell. I guess when Tim Curry's got a deeper edge to his voice. I like that he's calling Dooku Tyrannus again. I love that.
Yeah, when they talk one on one, they call each other Tyrannus and Sidious. Like they're like little girls together. They're like, I just like that scene where Dooku's walking outside.
Let's use our secret names right now because we're doing evil.
I just like that scene. Like, Dooku's walking outside with this little hologram, and they're just kind of laughing together as they're walking away through the carnage of dead clone bodies. He's just like, we did it, Master. And he's like, yes, we did do it. Good job, Tyrannus. Come home. Let's talk about it.
He's so happy. He even gives a clone's head a little kick as he's getting back on his ship.
That's one of my notes. I was you dick.
My only other note is I just loved the space battle. They had a ground battle, and then this part they had a great space battle with lots of like blue light, thin blue lasers, and like lots of really precise thin blue lines. Like even where they were fighting was just around the side of the planet where the sun was starting to come around, so there was just this thin line around. It was just really beautiful, and the sort of proto X-Wings looked really cool, too. It was just a really nice Star Wars battle to watch. But that's about all I got for part 3.
I realized something as I was reading this. The scene where Anakin is holding Clovis and Padme off the edge is very much like the Ahsoka during the Saul Guerrera arc,
yes,
which is holding Lux and Steela.
It's a little too convenient because it takes all the responsibility off Anakin, you know?
Yeah.
Because Anakin does want to drop him.
Yeah.
And Anakin's a little justified by this point in wanting to drop him. So.
You know, I actually had a moment I remember when I was thinking about this, because I thought about it earlier when I was watching the episode of, like, this is a lot like the Ahsoka arc. Why didn't he use the Force? He's much stronger in the Force
whipped,
than Ahsoka
he could have whipped, but he could have floated both of them up there. I was just thinking maybe maybe when you use the Force, you need to be grounded and like
focused.
No, not even like physically. Like if he floated them both up over his head, maybe it might have, you know, he didn't have anything to grip onto on the side. I don't know, but like, yeah, I wondered why Anakin should have just been able to fling both of them right over his shoulder, you would think.
Yeah, so I just
but then
ask,
again,
like,
maybe he was wouldn't have minded if Clovis took a little bungee jump without the bungee.
I think a lot of it is also like, going back to last episode when him and Padme have that breakup scene, like that was really the first time in this arc where Anakin like realized what he did. Like he messed up by beating up Clovis, and he actually listened to Padme for the first time in this arc. So I think there was like also some of it where he realized, like, even though Clovis has tricked everybody, he needs at least to stand for his crimes. And maybe he didn't trust himself to use the Force to save both of them,
well,
you know?
Like, yeah, and he told Padme what he did to the Sand People, And when he's sitting there, when he lets her see it on Clovis, that must have scared the hell out of her, because she's like, he's just going to kill this guy.
Yeah.
He's just going to slaughter this guy, just beat his, cave his head in or something, you know? So
the difference
that's
is
definitely
that
not
Anakin
what you
is...
want your new wife to see.
And the difference is also is that Anakin's a little bit older, so like we saw last episode, he snaps out of it, and he's like, what am I doing? What am I doing? What am I doing? So I do think that a lot of it is like maybe I don't think he trusts himself to. I also don't think he really thought about it. They were falling and he grabs them. I don't think he was really thinking about the Force at the moment. But I also think like he tried so hard to save Clovis as well is because of last episode where he was like, I messed up. I mean, Clovis isn't a good guy.
It wasn't because he was feeling a little better towards Clovis. It's because of Padme.
Yeah, and even then, I don't think he's feeling great towards Clovis, but I think he does believe that he should at least... He shouldn't die.
He's trying.
Yeah. He doesn't think he should die, and that's actually progress for Anakin, who has shanked bad guys multiple times in the show. So Anakin made some progress. Good job.
Yeah, I mean, by this time, nobody has very much sympathy for Clovis.
No.
Even though he did get used, he's still kind of a turd anyway.
Yeah, it does not make up for him, everything he did last episode.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
I promise this is my last Thrawn Alliance note. I promise. I promise. Because it fits so well in this arc. It's so interesting how much it so ties into this novel, because the past stuff with Thrawn and Anakin, Thrawn repeatedly has to say to Anakin several times in the book that Anakin's focus is not Padme. It needs to be victory in the mission. They are there to stop a separatist plot. That is their mission. And he has to remind him multiple times in the book that Padme is not the mission. And of course, Anakin like internally goes, no, it's Padme. And their mission to stop the separatists here, Yoda and Windu pretty much have the exact same conversation with him, going, you're here to save Scipio. If you save Padme, cool, but your mission is to save the Banks. Save the Banks, not Padme. Padme comes second. And Anakin's like, thumbs up, whatever, dude.
Yep, Padme's got her stuff and let her do it. Yep.
Yep. So I thought there's so many great tie-ins with this arc, and I'm really enjoying it. So how do you feel now that you know the grand plan about the last three episodes is all about Palpatine getting all the money for his empire?
Makes sense. He's got to get that money somewhere.
And it's funny. I never actually thought it would be so interesting to watch an arc about banks and interests and loans and transferring money to Palpatine, because it's something I actually never thought about. Like,
well, think about it. By episode three, that's when the Death Star goes into production. That's when they can fund. Right now, he's got all that money. He's sending that. He's sending money over to Geonosis right now, you know?
And I think that's the interesting thing. They made something that could have been a really, really boring story of Palpatine transfers money to himself to fund an empire, and they make it really interesting. And it's a thing that, like you were saying last episode, it's something I never thought I would actually see in Clone Wars, that they would actually do an arc about Palpatine getting money. This is how he did it. And
yeah,
I just think that's
a lot of important things went down in this arc, and they went down in the, like they should, in the background of a story, of a deceptive story where everybody's running around like chickens with their heads cut off, and in the end, Palpatine's got what he wants.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was very well done. It's quite brilliant, actually, and I never thought a story about banks would be this interesting. I also have, as Dooku is leaving Scipio, he takes a moment to kick a dead clone trooper in the head, because of course he did. Oh, my poor clones. So either Dooku and Palpatine have a really, really, really smart plan going on, or everyone else around them, like the, both Senates, Clovis, the Jedi, and Padme, are really, really fucking dumb.
Why can't it be both?
It's both. They're both dumb, and this was a really good plan. Really good plan. Because even, like, Dooku's droid was like, sir, why are we pulling out of this battle? And he's like, because we're done here. And the droid's like, really? And he's like, yeah, let's go home. And he's like, okay, pull out. Yep. Even the droids are like surprised by it, and he's like,
yeah,
nope.
Well, he's just leaving all the rest of the droids on the planet behind too. He's just like, yeah, screw them, we're done here.
Well, they're not people, we're fine. So now that we have completed the Rush Clovis story, from him being on Geonosis and poisoning Padme and all that, and giving up his life trying to save her, and now this arc and stuff like that. What do you think of Resh Clovis as a character?
Oh, he's a turd, basically. He kind of means well, but he's a wishy-washy turd in the end. He's all about himself, and that makes him open for manipulation, and he gets what he deserves. That's what I say. Not a big fan of Resh Clovis.
Me neither. I mean, there are two times where, the first time in the first Geonosis arc, like, I think it's season two when we see him, after Padme is poisoned and everything, Anakin leaves him behind, and Clovis gives Anakin the plans and the antidote to save Padme at the risk of his own life. And it's like, okay, in that episode, you're like, okay, yeah, you're a little bit of a turd and you're a traitor, but you have good intentions, and he really cares for Padme.
It was earlier on in lighter times, and it was a lighter story. It was more of like a light, you know, little jealousy story, but things have advanced.
And if that was all we ever got of Resh Clovis, I'd be like, okay, yeah, he's on the wrong side, but at least he has some redeeming qualities because of how he feels about.
Yeah, wait. He's just kind of an ex-boyfriend, you know, but...
Yeah.
You know, Padme, you know, she's a strong woman, so she probably had some, you know, her past boyfriends are probably not without redeeming qualities. There's some reason that they dated in the first place. But he just seemed kind of like, oh yeah, I can see why they broke up, you know?
Yeah. But then we get to this arc, and you know, the first episode with Imbo and stuff like that, it's a lot like the season two episode. Like, he's like, you know, Padme, I know I've done things in the past, but I really believe in this, and I really do want to fix things and make things right. And you're like, okay, I can kind of see that Clovis has kind of turned over a new leaf after the Separatists probably almost killed him in season
after
two.
After the last story with him, yeah, for sure.
I get that. But then there's, like, little things, like, when they're in his house and he tries to take her hand, and you're like, okay, he still has feelings for her, okay. And then we get last episode, and nothing about last episode is okay, where he tries to, like, force a kiss on her and, like, is, like, fighting Anakin over her and, like, saying that, like, he's going to win her back.
He's kind of crazy, I think, because he's way over his head. And
he's a creeper last episode. Like, he's not okay. And
the situation is not bringing out the best in him. It's uncovering the worst in him.
Yeah. And so then when we get to this episode and his entire world, he gets everything he's ever wanted. He's sitting in his bank and, like, he's overlooking things. He has everything he's wanted. I'm not rooting for him anymore. Like, because of last episode. There's nothing redeemable about him. So, like, when his world is, like, literally crashing and burning around him, I'm like, good.
Yeah, you asked for it, dude. Yep.
Yeah, good. And so, like, he, again, gives up his life so Padme can get saved. It's not a redeeming moment because we saw who he really was last episode. And so I'm just like, good, karma. That's what you get. And I'm usually, like, not... I like villains, and I do like when some... I don't think every villain needs to be redeemed, and in this episode, Resh Clovis is not redeemed in my eyes. He got exactly what he deserved. And I'm, like, it's just... It's really... Like, it's... I'm... I don't... It could have very easily played off as a very heroic moment that he let go of Anakin to save Padme, and it's just... It's not.
You're just like, oh, okay, dude, well, you know.
It's actually very cowardly, because he was talking to Padme. He was like, what's my legacy going to be? What is people going to think of me now? And it's him going, I don't want to face that. And he chooses not to face that. He chooses not to find justice in all this and fight harder and try to win back his face. He's just like, bye. I don't know. It's just, I don't have any sympathy anymore. If it was just the season two arc, I could be like, okay, this guy has some nice qualities, but this arc absolutely just destroys the character for me.
Lot of fucks to give for Clovis.
Not at all. He can go use his mouthwash. The Clovis. Wash twice a day. That was from last episode.
Minty fresh Clovis.
Yeah. This arc is probably close to one of the better political arcs. Who knew an arc about how Palpatine funded the Empire could be so enjoyable? Anyway, so Padme! Just because Anakin saved your life and you were tricked by Clovis because of Dooku does not mean your marriage is fixed. Oh my god.
I don't
her
know
marriage
if it's fixed,
is not
she's,
fixed.
She's just thinking, well, Anakin was kind of right about Clovis, and he just saved my life.
And she is apologizing to him. She's like,
right,
"I'm so
right.
sorry, Anakin."
Yeah, because
and
she's mad at Clovis, and and she's just like, "You were right. I was wrong." You know. So yeah, and, they have a very dysfunctional relationship.
and that's absolutely like I get that. Like she was wrong about Clovis, and she's apologizing about being wrong about Clovis. They still have gaping problems in their marriage. But the thing is how it ends and how she's with Anakin in the Senate at the end of the episode, you know they're back together. They're fixed. And that goes back to me saying last episode when she has this, like, big, powerful speech about leaving Anakin, it's Padmade because we know episode 3 happens. And it's just, they Padmade the Padme scene. And it's just, it makes me so frustrated because she just goes back to him. And, I think I said it in the very first episode of this arc, there's a long, probably well-thought-out, like dissertation about Padme Amidala and what kind of abusive relationship she's in. And all the signs are in this arc. She's in an abusive relationship, and she's stuck here, and she feels like she's stuck. And she feels like she can't escape, and she can't leave it. But that's not this podcast. But it's probably out there somewhere.
For sure.
That's all I have for this episode. Do you have anything else?
No, you want me to score it up?
Yeah, hold on, I need to catch my breath. I just ranted longer than I was expecting from my notes.
I gave this one an 8.5, not as high as the last one, because it just didn't have... I thought it kind of, like, went a little crazy at the end and wrapped everything up really quickly and cleanly, and, you know, Clovis letting go of the hands, all that was a little bit like, let's get all this going and wind this up. But boy, oh boy, the two battles in it are what brought this from probably a 7.5 to an 8.5 episode. They were really visually great. I just didn't like it as much as the last episode, but all three of these were really strong episodes, I thought. And really tied in to episode 3.
Mm-hmm.
I like ye.
Well, for me, this is always one of the better political arcs. It's not boring like a lot of the season 3 ones. And
no,
it really
they both have a good amount of fighting in them.
Yeah, and the emotional stuff is stuff that needs to be addressed.
And they address it pretty bluntly, and they don't soft pedal it, so I really like that.
Not at all. And all the episodes just build well on itself. Clovis is a creep, and even though he has good intentions, he's not redeemable. And his sacrifice for Padme might seem honorable, but it doesn't fix his previous problems. And I have many, 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 many issues about Padme going back to Anakin so easily. And it feels like it was a plot point of they can't break up because episode 3. Now, the redeeming parts of this is, of course, poor Clone Commander Thorn in like the 1 minute he was in the scene, and we got to see Rex. But overall, man, I just love Dooku and Palpatine in this entire arc. They're so good, especially Palpatine. Palpatine is so good in this arc. So good.
Oh, this is just before Palpatine really peaks, you know? I mean, he does run the Empire, but I think his peak is when he gets it, you know, when he does the turn and chucks Yoda out. I don't think he's ever going to reach a happier, more, you know, crazy point. I think he was working on another one of those by the end of Return of the Jedi, but he didn't get it. Palpatine's just loving life. It's finally, you know, decades and decades of plotting and planning are finally starting to pay off, and he's getting to watch it.
Yeah, and he's almost there. He's almost there.
Yeah.
Maybe on a prayer. Anyway. The line is we're halfway there. We're halfway there. Anyway. But yeah, I mean, this is like, because I feel like once Palpatine gets the Empire, it's just a lot of like micromanaging. Just trying to keep it together. And
yeah. Yeah, he's just the head of state.
Yeah, and it's just maintaining it. Actually, Megan from a few episodes ago showed me a video where it was like it's kind of like the lip syncing people, but it's a different group, and they pretty much portray the Empire as just like middle management, and like Palpatine's a CEO,
which
and
it mostly just, like, is. It basically is,
and it's hilarious because the Jedi are just like these hippies that don't want to follow the rules, and pretty much like Darth Maul is like an assistant manager, and so is like Dooku, and it's very true. So, like, yeah, you're right. This is the happiest that Palpatine is between this and episode 3 when everything comes together. And after that, it's him pretty much running a business for 20 years. So, oh, I give the episode 8 out of 10, by the way.
That's another solid one where you're lower than me.
Yeah, it was a solid 8 across the board. I have a lot of, like, relationship problems that I have of them not going back to things, so. As always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. If you review us on iTunes, it helps people find the show. But this week, our feedback comes from the... I can't talk anymore, man. This week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode, Solo, a character review. So this is our Solo movie review. This is our feedback. These are long.
I know. I only have to do a voice for one of them, though, so, and it's not Pat Delmore. So Paul C. Kelly writes in, listening to the initial thoughts on this, I now know more what hope felt like in the Force Awakens commentary. LOL.
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
We got to go back and listen to it, I guess. I guess a lot of your negatives were not as important to me when I saw this, which is perfectly fine, but here is my take. I was scared when I saw previews of Han Solo in this. Didn't feel to me like he looked like Han, but that all changed when I saw the film. Oh, yeah. He became a believable younger Han Solo for me. When the prequels were first announced in the 90s, this is what I imagined there being, because back then there were the legends of Han on Corellia and the story of him saving Chewie from the Imperials. Yeah, I thought we were sort of going to see that story too. I thought it added a lot. Well, we sort of did. I thought it added a lot more meaning to the Han, Chewie, and Lando dialogue moments of the original trilogy. Oh, yeah. I thought Beckett fit in very well as the send-off to Han. I thought what Han does to the Falcon in the Kessel Run and how Lando reacts to it is spectacular and adds more meaning to their relationship and Empire. I hate you. I know. And did you notice Lando says on Kessel, mining colonies, the worst.
Actually, I said this would be my last Throne Alliance's note. I'm lying. Black Spire, which is a town on Batuu where Thrawn and Anakin and Vader all visit at one point, actually in 2 points because it's in two timelines, is actually name-checked in Solo. It's during the Kessel Run scene, and Lando's like, we're never going to make it. We couldn't make it from Black Spire to so-and-so. And I was like, Black Spire, why does that sound so familiar? When I came across in the book, I was like, ah, Lando talked about it in Solo. So it's... It's one of those things where, like, the multimedia, like, crossing over twin stuff is really cool. Anyway, go ahead.
What is his business on Cloud City? Mining using cheap Ugnaught labor. Oh, yeah. Well, maybe he paid them well. Probably better than the Jedi Council did. That's probably true. They probably had a union. I may be pushing it, saying it was a good setup for a sequel, but I think it would if it did better at the box office. Music is great. I agree on that, too. Thought his move on Kira in the Cape Room was foreshadowing his eventual move on Leia in the asteroid. Oh, yeah. Also, I think maybe he did a lot of moves in sections of the Falcon. Also, there are a lot of hidden Easter egg references.
They made over 50 EU things canon again.
Holy shit.
Yeah, over 50.
Val tells Beckett they should have hired Bossk and not amateurs. As Hope mentioned, Beckett is said by Lando he killed Aura Sing. And also, I believe it tied into Lando to having debt to Aura Sing, so he was relieved she was thrown off a cliff. Oh, yeah. So we say.
I'm still
Well, we don't even have to say okay. So we say. She was literally thrown off a cliff, it sounds like.
I'm not okay with that still.
I like how they choose Han Solo lines that he could still say as a young person that would stick with him as an adult, like, oh yeah, watch this. Particularly because Han really does not mature much by the original trilogy. That's true. Okay, reactions to Darth Maul.
This is my favorite part of this, by the way.
I was surprised and thought it was cool. Me too. I think time will tell on it if it had a more positive effect. We'll see if it actually they follow through on it. That would be really hot. I saw this 3 times. First time, my cousin thought that Darth Maul was like another one of his species, like Savage. Second time, my friend was confused, saying he got cut in half, and then got pissed when I told him about the animated series that he didn't ever care to watch. This is great. Third time, my father, Father's Day gift, by the way, had no idea who he was, and when I started explaining, he says he has never gotten to the end of Phantom Menace, and when it comes on a TNT Star Wars marathon, it's the one that comes on at like 4 a.m., so he always misses it. For me, it satisfied what I was looking for, and I think it would have been better received and possibly better developed if it came out 2 years after, say, Last Jedi. Yeah, I think the Solo movie in general would have definitely.
I think they should have waited until December.
I think I like it better than you, and most people did, but I guess that is a good thing. It is for you. I think it surpasses at least the prequels. Yeah. I do, however, think they should definitely keep making standalones. I agree. Just give them space, and if possible, do not leak out bad vibes on the production. Yeah, that's a great point. Anyway, sorry, Chris, for making you read all this, but Def wanted something to give my thoughts on this for sure. Oh, yeah. Well, I don't mind reading it.
Here's the thing, because this is the very first line of Brian's next comment, too. Apparently we came off really haterade towards the movie. I liked the movie.
I liked the movie too.
I just didn't love it.
I enjoyed the movie. It was disappointing as a Star Wars movie, but it was still good as a movie.
Yeah, and I enjoyed it. So apparently we came off very haterade-y. And I just want to clarify that between Paul's words and what Brian's first sentence is, because I liked the movie. I just didn't think it was great, which is a difference.
We didn't give a ravey review of it. It was easier to nitpick on it, I guess, maybe. So, but all right. So Brian Repper says, "Wow, a bit more hate thrown at this flick than I expected." I don't think we threw any like hate at it.
Brian, I'm not sending you any more gifts on Pokemon Go anymore.
Ah,
we're friends on Pokemon Go. No more gifts for you.
I definitely was in the camp with most people about being skeptical of a Han Solo movie, but after seeing it, I can easily place it as one of my most favorite movies of all time.
Wow.
Well, that definitely, I guess then maybe in relation, our review did seem kind of hatery, maybe. Even after repeated viewings, I can't stop myself from smiling through the first half of the movie. I have to watch it again. I've only seen it once, so.
Same here. I really get
to do that. I do agree that there's some quirks with the flick, but I'm not sure that I see the same problems Hope has with Kira. I think you mostly had problems with her because you would have preferred the other actress as her.
What it came down to, I just didn't think she had really good chemistry with the guy playing Han Solo. And I love her in Game of Thrones, but I think she's much better suited for a character like that in Game of Thrones and stuff. But again, I need to see it again because I might enjoy it. I might enjoy more knowing that she's working for Maul the entire movie, because most of the entire movie, it's like she's really boring. And that's with the Maul review.
That's what I'm saying. There might be a different layer to it once you know who she is.
Yeah, so I definitely need to see it again.
So he says, "I didn't see her as monotonous, but she's playing close to the vest." Yeah, that was sort of my argument, too. She makes it very clear that she's willing to go to the extreme lengths to survive, but she doesn't have a lot of time for personal pleasure. She's not as affectionate as she was when she was younger because of all the scars she's gained over the years. Even so, she still does what she can to save Han. I agree with that. Well, I can appreciate the idea of Kira's promotion being as simple as her dumping Han to focus on her career. She tells Han in the elevator that she knows a bit more than him. She knew that if Crimson Dawn investigated what happened with their shipment, they'd hunt down and kill Han. So instead, she starts to cover up to hide Han's involvement. It's subtleties like that that I feel is really telling of the depth of her character. Anyway, just my little rebuttal to a part of y'all's review. Can't wait to talk Star Wars with you guys more. Yeah, we gotta have you back on the show.
That actually might be happening soon. We were talking about that, how we want to do a roundtable, and it looks like it's gonna probably be about late October, so we'll probably figure
right
that
around
out.
Right Halloween time.
All right, so we got candy. Where is this one from?
one's called Krauka, and it's got a black and white wrapper. It's a little rectangle, and it's got a cow on it.
So if you're wondering what we're doing, Chris is a baby and hates American Kit Kats. So our friend Dario sends us candy from all over the world to review, so Chris can eat things other than American Kit Kats. Oh, I folded up my letter. This is the Krauka Milsna, and it's a crumbly sweet of unique traditional flavors, so this is the website. And I believe it's Polish, as is the Kwoki Milaniskiem milk cream fudge. So this one I believe is from Poland.
It looks like a caramel. It looks like a rectangular caramel.
I'm trying to open mine. It doesn't have much of a smell to it. It's not the same consistency
as a caramel.
I'm still trying to open mine. This package is ridiculous. Open. I want to eat you. I want you in my mouth.
It's a weird consistency. It's good.
Open. Open. I want to eat you. I want to put you in my mouth. Open. Let go! There we go. Oh, I thought it was going to be more chewy. I always get scared with candies because I have very brittle teeth. So a lot of times, like, really chewy candy, like taffy and stuff, can really hurt my teeth. But this doesn't have that.
It looks like you're... It falls apart in flakes. It doesn't stick to your teeth.
You know what this reminds me of? Cowtails. Have you ever had the cowtail candy?
This
is just like a cowtail.
It's good. It's not too sweet.
It's not what I thought it was going to be. I thought definitely it'd be like, I'd be peeling this off my fillings, or this would be pulling out my fillings.
No, it sort of falls apart in your mouth. It's got a very sort of like light creme brulee flavor to it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Daria, that's wonderful. Thank you so much. Well, that's all I have for this episode. Do you have anything else?
No, I guess we're starting a new arc next time.
Starting the Jar Jar arc next time.
Ooh.
Jar Jar and Mace Windu.
Oh, boy.
I'm very excited. I've only seen these episode once, so I'm actually very excited about it. Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at tutufreaks.com. That's our website, where all these glorious podcasts come from. Something I haven't been mentioning as much as I should this summer. We're doing a crossover with Next Generation, First Generation, where they're doing a bunch of 80s movie commentaries, so keep an eye out for them. We've already put out 3 of them so far this summer, with a few more to come. Probably right into the fall, it looks like, from their lineup, so keep an eye out for those. You can see us on Twitter, where our Twitter page is maintained by the superhuman Gene, the podcasting machine.
Gene.
And we have a Facebook page, Two True Freaks Facebook page, and the Two True Freaks Facebook Cantina, where you can go and shoot the shit. And yeah, go on over to Two True Freaks, and you can sign up for us on iTunes too, of course, if you look up Two True Freaks there. But you can go to our website and join our feed, go to our Amazon link, and if you're buying anything on Amazon, we can use the money. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at JGuysAndJedi. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinax on Twitter. I'm also writing a fan fiction called Forces of Gravity. It's a Thrawn fan fiction, and that's on Archive of Our Own, which is AO3 for short, and my name on there is Chaos Lydia. And if you listen to our episode a few weeks ago with Megan, I talk a lot more about it too. It's a little bit of a romantic romp, and it's fun, and it's heartbreaking, and it's very slice of life, and I love it. And I also beta read a story called Valkyrie Strike, which is about Thrawn turning to the rebels. And Megan's coming right along with that too, and she talked about it in that episode as well. So you can find those on Archive of Our Own, and if you like it, give me a little comment and let me know what you think. Oh, we did 2 episodes and I'm tired now.
Yeah, it takes a lot out of a person.
It really does. I was tired going into this. I was telling Chris, like, before we did the last 2 episodes, I woke up from a nap and I'm still tired from it. Now I'm just like, ugh, I need another nap, but I have to go take care of kitties because I gotta go take care of some kitties.
It's been hot here. I'm all sweaty and smoky, like I went to work. Well, because in my backyard over the last 5-6 years, as I cut off branches off our trees and stuff, they sort of were piling up in a brush pile. And you know, as they would dry out, I would break them up into smaller pieces, thinking, I don't know how I'm going to get rid of this brush pile. Probably someday I'll just put it out for the garbage to take or something. But then when Dario came up to visit, he brought me one of those, like, chimney fireplaces.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the chimneys. Yeah,
yes.
We have one.
And then I realized there I could put all those branches up the chimney, and then I can burn them all up. It was 90 degrees, and I was out back burning off my brush pile. So I'm all covered with smoke smell. And I'm saving all the ashes for the winter, because you can use the ashes to put on your driveway, and it'll melt the ice. And it's better than salt. It won't destroy your car, you know?
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah, well, you don't have to know that. You're in Georgia.
Well, we have a chimney, and we burn stuff all... Like, we don't get snow and stuff. We get ice storms. So, that's actually...
For an ice storm, it would be fantastic. Because it makes it less slippery, and it darkens it enough so the sun just melts it, you know?
Yeah,
and
that's really good.
And it stays
good
on top of the... On top of it, and just sort of makes it your driveway a solar panel, you know?
That's actually, like, super good to know, because, like, people always make fun of the South in the winter because we don't know how to handle snow. But someone actually did, like, a little study on it that winter storms are actually more dangerous in the South because it falls as ice first and then snow. So under the snow, there's a layer of ice, unlike the North where it's just snow.
In the North, we put on our snow tires in the winter, you know, to make it a little better.
They don't even sell those here.
Right. And I mean, when I was growing up, we had a wood stove, so we generated a large amount of ashes. You know, we had a big bucket that we would just take the ashes from. So basically, even though we had a lot more snow back then than where I lived, I would dig out after the initial snowfall, you know, you would dig out our driveway, which was pretty long. So it was a pretty amazing task to get the driveway shoveled, but for the most part, once you got it shoveled, we had enough ashes from our wood stove going on the tire that I wouldn't shovel as much as every day. I would just go out and put ashes down on the driveway, and that would melt off the snow enough. And every once in a while, you'd have to shovel some if you got really heavy snowfall. But mostly, you just threw the ashes on it, and that would melt it off. So that's what I'm planning on doing this winter. I'll probably only have enough ashes, really, to do it a couple times. But that'll probably be all I'll really need, the way our winters have been going lately.
I'm going to mosey. I got to take care of cats. So everybody, we'll see you next week with Jar Jar making out with people.
Ooh.
I like how it's the...
It evolved a little as I thought about it, yeah.
I know, just like, and then Yoda comes in.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
Yes.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Test, test, say duh.
Yeah.
Good luck.